Yeah, so I'm standing with Vinay. Vinay's our head of product in Chartmogul. So I haven't gone very far this time to speak to him, just next door from my desk. So I thought it'd be interesting to chat with you, Vinay, about product stuff, because product stuff is cool, and it's this big thing that a lot of people don't completely or don't have a lot of visibility into, like, what it is.
Yeah.
It is so many things, and it takes so many forms in different companies. But I don't know, maybe if you could just describe quickly what you do here in Chartmogul, as, like, what is your role as a product guy in Chartmogul? What do you do right now?
So right now I'm director of product. Head of product is a little different, but
okay, so that was a mistake.
For lack of anybody else to take up VP of product or head of product positions right now, you could say I'm head of product. So what do I do? I do right now, because it's still early days, I'm still getting a grip of the backlog. That's starting bottom up, looking at what the issues are in the backlog for developers, and putting that in the perspective of the larger picture, which I get from the executives.
As the director of product, you work very closely with Nick, who is the CEO and who in some ways, like, defines the vision. But would you say that your job is to, like, turn that vision into something more concrete that we can eventually build and work on?
Absolutely. Product is all about turning ideas and vision into product, basically. So that takes considering the problem from different angles, defining what needs to be built, and then executing on that definition and delivering the product. So it's really end-to-end analysis, definition, and delivery. So
who else do you interact with as a product person? I'm assuming you take your input not only from the leader of the business, but also you need to get input from customers and other areas of the business, right?
Right. So typically, roadmaps are defined taking into consideration the business goals as well as the customers' requests, right? The market needs. So two extremely important entities for me to interact with are the business leaders of the company, and then the customers, the market. Of course, it's also important on an execution level to coordinate and interact with other departments in the company, like marketing and success and engineering. But the work that needs to be done by product is largely determined by the business leaders and the market.
Would you consider yourself kind of part of the development team? Or because it seems like that's really, like, the team that you work the most closely with. And I think a lot of I've heard product roles described before as, like, they do everything except write the code, you know. Like,
right. Yes, in Chartmogul, in our current setup, I do consider myself part of the development team. And given that I come from a development background, I do enjoy that position as well. But like you say, it's not always true in different organizations. I've seen product departments that are actually just product marketing that almost have no interaction with engineers. And I've also seen technical product managers define, you know, technical product management defined as a specific role. And for which you typically have engineers leading product projects. So it really depends on the business and the market and how the company needs to be structured to take on the business and market challenges.
What would you say that people should look for in their first product hire?
Jack of all trades, king of none. I think
so that, generalist.
Yes, that's incredibly valuable. Having a generalist product manager is like one of the most valuable things that I've seen in multiple startups, and my entire career has been in startups.
Mm-hmm.
So to test for a generalist product manager is usually tricky, but starting with aptitude is a good start. Somebody who has the ability to learn and apply very quickly is someone who has the potential to become a generalist product manager, and the past experience in terms of technical knowledge, business knowledge, also could be tested.
Mm. Do you think a tech background is really important for a product? Because I think it's quite a common requirement for in a tech company as a product manager to have like a computer science or software engineering background.
It is important for a multitude of reasons. But again, I do believe that someone with high aptitude is capable of building that technical knowledge for themselves.
Mm.
So I think when it comes to testing or when you're hiring somebody for a product position, you shouldn't be looking at their technical background as much as their aptitude and
yeah.
their motivation to learn. So even if they do not have any background in technology or software engineering or development, if they show the capacity to learn and apply quickly, then they're still capable of doing a great job.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for me as well, one of the key things there is not only like having an understanding on all of these different levels, but being able to communicate on different levels as well, right? Coming from a product role myself before this, that was one of the most difficult things for me was like, one second you're discussing like literally coding problems with developers,
mm-hmm.
and the next second you're discussing with the marketing team on how we like sell or communicate the value of the product, and then you know the next time you might be discussing you know with a completely different team of people that have a completely different set of needs.
Right. So this is so we're touching on soft skill topics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are the hard skill considerations of what makes a good product manager, and then there are the soft skill considerations. So a good product manager has the ability to make up for his lack of jargon or lack of enough understanding, you know, and so that goes into the realm of gaining and retaining trust amongst the people that he or she works with.
Mm.
And so a good product manager has the soft skills to manage these relationships as well.
Mm. Yeah. So you're coming from a technical background, but you've also done product roles before. Had you done product for a SaaS business before Chartmogul?
Yes, I did do product for... Before Chartmogul, I was working with ZenMate, which is a B2C SaaS product. And before that, I wasn't working for a SaaS business, but quite similar. I was working for a ticketing product, which was revenues based on ticket sales.
Hmm.
But I would say I'm exposed to the SaaS business the most in my career.
I guess one thing that's interesting is how the SaaS business model aligns, if at all, with like product development processes. So, you know, obviously the agile methodology is very popular right now and promotes like a kind of iterative, incremental approach to
mm-hmm.
to like software development and product development. And then on the business side, you have the SaaS model, which, you know, everything recurs, the revenue recurs, your customers stick around.
Yeah.
I guess the main thing there that probably crosses over into the product side is that you have to keep delivering value throughout the lifetime of the customer, right? Otherwise,
yeah.
you're going to lose them. How does that affect the thinking when you're building the product?
I think it makes things very smooth, in fact. The SaaS business model in along with the agile methodologies, really helps you take more risks in terms of the features and the enhancements that you deliver, and be able to run more experiments and learn and iterate on a full stack basis, starting all the way from the market to the backend logic. And being able to iterate on this is extremely powerful and helps you keep validating and pivoting your product and staying in business. However, a SaaS business model and agile methodology don't always go together, because it really comes down to your deployment cycles, and it really comes down to your deployment process as well. So typically, web-based SaaS business, it's quite easy to do deployments multiple times a day even if required. But then my experience at ZenMate was a little trickier, because we had our product was browser extensions, and we also had mobile applications. So typically, getting these incremental product releases into the hands of customers in these platforms is not simply a deployment process that's entirely in your control.
Yeah.
So you need to take into consideration review processes and how that affects releases.
Yeah, I guess as soon as you get into the mobile world, it gets very difficult, because you have to plan for, you know, especially on Apple's platform, the crazy black box review process.
Exactly.
But I guess in the web world, at least, it really like shortens the feedback loop of, you know, gathering input from customers, building incremental value, and then shipping it, and, you know,
definitely does. I just wanted to highlight the point that if a SaaS business doesn't always mean that iterative product development fits well, because there may be platform dynamics to consider as well.
What do you think are the main challenges or the main difficulties that SaaS models like impose on product development? I guess the main thing that comes to my mind is that you said it like promotes kind of experimentation and things, but if you get something wrong, surely you've got a greater potential that you just lose customers, right? They can quite easily just hit the cancel button if they don't like what you're doing.
That's absolutely true. As much as the barrier to entry for customers is easy, the barrier to exit is low as well. So you stand a very high chance of churn, essentially. And not only because of product that's been released and doesn't meet the standards of customers, but also could be because of not releasing promise features on time, or not releasing product enhancements often enough. So this is where customer success plays a massive role. So I am of the strong opinion that success in SaaS business comes not only from product, but value in a SaaS business comes not only from product, but also from service. So customer success and sales play a huge role in managing the relationship with the customer, and giving some bandwidth to product as well in order to be able to manage the business well.
I guess it also changes the thought process of the customer when they're like evaluating your service. I feel like people in the SaaS world, they would make a decision to buy a product not only based on like the value that it gives them right now, but also like the promise of the future.
Absolutely. Customers don't pay for product, they pay for value, right? So,
but there's almost like a built-in expectation with a SaaS that value keeps on kind of adding to their experience.
Absolutely. And I think for me as a product manager, that's a very exciting thing about SaaS, you know, there's no end to how much you can build.
It's also scary as well.
It is. I mean, being good at product is about running the marathon well and not the sprint, you know. So I know it's a little bit ironic considering sprints and agile development, but well, it is how it is.
How do you measure the impact of features on, you know, so the SaaS model generally makes everything much more measurable, right? We, I mean, at Chartmogul, we're all about metrics and everything, and you know, we have much more reliable ways to measure different aspects of our business. From a product perspective, what stuff would you care about? Like, what, how would you measure?
I think for me, the most important metric is recommendations. So if a customer likes a feature so much that they not only share the feature and announce it on social media, but also go ahead and recommend the product to their peer or colleague, then I think product has done a good job in solving the customer's problem and delivering value. Because there is no higher praise that you can get.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty powerful as well. It's incredible. From a marketing perspective.
Exactly.
Well.
So if you, even if you take a selfish viewpoint on the value of such feedback recommendations, it essentially means that you need to spend lesser money in getting people to try your product. And your customers are doing your marketing for you. So even from your own business's standpoint, it just makes good business sense. So that should be the goal that you aim for.
How do you prioritize features? And I mean, it's always a problem for a product manager to take all these inputs and decide what we work on first, right? But in a SaaS world, it's much more difficult to put a, like, just create a business case for a feature and say it delivers the X amount of, like, value to the business.
Right. Yeah, it is always tricky. And good friend of mine once said, that's why we exist, right? Product managers exist. Like you said last week.
Yeah.
So it's like inbuilt job retention, you know?
Yeah.
But coming back to the question, how do you prioritize? It's always about balancing out different goals. You look out for your own business goals, what the business is planning to achieve and aiming to achieve over the next 1 year or so. And you look at what customers are asking for, what the market is asking for. And you basically do intersection of these two sets, and it automatically
makes some like judgment call.
I mean, I've seen product represented as the intersection of business, tech, and usability. I think the market and the company vision is represented in the business space. Tech and usability are implementation constraints. And so you take in what the market is dictating, you put that in the perspective of the business vision, and then you look at how much time it's going to take and how much effort it's going to take to implement, right? And then that gives you a fairly qualitative understanding of the priorities and how you could execute on the project. So yeah.
Do you think it's difficult for like a small SaaS business to? So what I see at like early stage is that you get a lot of early adopters that love your product and they want to see it go in certain directions, and they want feature X and feature Y, but it's actually quite rare that aligns very well with your vision and your roadmap. But at such an early stage, you know, retaining those customers may be quite like seem like quite a significant thing for you. Is that really difficult? If your biggest customer is asking for feature X, how do you go about like deciding whether that's something you should do or not?
Yeah, so there are three things that determine whether you're going to handle the situation well or not. One is having an excellent visionary. So there has to be someone standing up for your product and company vision, and being able to not just stand up to that vision, but also manage the relationship with the customer in a way that they understand the vision and maybe even modify the vision depending on what the customer has to say and the feedback that he gets. Mm-hmm. So in the very early stages, it's typically the same person, probably the CEO, who's managing the vision, saying no to the customer, as well as managing the relationship so that the customer doesn't leave altogether. And as the company grows, this is typically then managed by, you know, three different entities. There's the CEO still managing the vision, or the product visionary still managing the vision. There are product managers saying no to feature requests. Mm-hmm. And then there's the customer success department that's managing the relationship with the customer, even though we are not building the features. So all of these still need to carry through all through the lifetime of the company for the business to remain successful.
Mm.
That's my opinion, actually.
The only thing I would add is that for me, from what I've seen, it's like having this laser sharp focus is all the more important at the early stage when you have such limited resources and
absolutely
and time.
Absolutely.
And clouding that with one-off requests for other pieces of functionality or things that don't quite align with your laser sharp focus just serve to kind of cloud that, I guess.
Yes, it does serve to cloud it, but I don't believe that requests that are outside the vision should entirely be discounted. Mm-hmm. One must analyze the requests and see where they are coming from. Mm-hmm. And whether there is more value in serving those requests rather than the current vision.
Yeah.
And this constant analysis and constant recalculation is also very important.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. I know we're a bit short on time, and I don't want to keep you for so long. I have like two more questions. The first one is, what do you think is the right time to bring on a PM to a startup?
I think in the very early stages, product is pretty much the only thing that you have to sell. Mm. So I think the sooner the better. Somebody working on product and selling that. But it really depends on the founding team, the skills of the founding team as well.
Mm.
So in our case, I think Nick did a fantastic job, of course. And he was pretty much the product manager from day one.
Yeah.
And so having a product manager from day one gives you far higher chance of success as a business.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you think product guys make good founders?
Absolutely, because they do make good founders because of the how I described them, jack of all trades, king of none.
Yeah.
When you add the ability to when you add high aptitude to that, that also means that they can evolve along with the company. And they would be able to like hand off responsibility in some areas and start becoming the king of one area, you know? So I do think product people make great founders.
Cool. And then lastly, I was wondering if you could just talk a bit about like what you use day to day in terms of tools as a PM, because I know we had a discussion about this the other day and like whether there's like a great tool or set of tools for product work, and I'm not sure there is, but like what do you do most of your work in? I know a lot of what you do is communication, which I guess mainly happens in Slack, but
yeah. No, there is no great tool out there, so somebody go build one. And Yeah, a lot of it is communication. If I believe good product can still be outputted even without tools. So it could be purely soft skills based. But then Trello is a fantastic tool. It's just so flexible and so tried and true that it can be applied always. And besides that, GitHub is great for technical issues. But then I prefer Post-its. I prefer the wall, pen, paper, Post-its.
We're standing in a room that's fairly well plastered with different colored Post-its. Actually, it used to be even worse, right? Or better. But I think physical tools in an environment where you need everybody to see what you're doing and to have input, I guess, are quite important. Like I would always choose a physical whiteboard over a digital.
Yeah, and there is something about using your hands, using your pen, feeling the tactile feedback of putting pen on paper or pencil on paper and drawing something out that helps get the creative juices flowing. And that's extremely essential for product to be able to harness this energy at any given point in time. So use the tools that work for you, but do use your hands and paper a lot, as much as you can.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Okay. Anything else that you wanna discuss?
Not really.
We covered a lot of stuff here in a short space of time.
Nobody has ever asked me to do this before, so I don't know if this is of much use at all. But
I think it is, and I think there's a lot of topics around product management and product development that people don't really get much insight into. Where's your, like, are there any resources that you recommend for reading more stuff about that, or
I think,
or a book would be good?
There are a bunch of those. There's Good Product Manager, Bad Product Manager, which is a great tool. I follow All Things Basecamp because I think they have a great product mindset. So Signal versus Noise, read the book Rework, and what's the first book?
I don't know, I didn't read that one.
Okay, the first book was even better.
I'll put it in the post.
To go even a little bit more higher and meta, I would suggest reading The Goal and The Goal 2 by Eliyahu M. Goldhart. These are like classic management books, but they give you a massive perspective, a business perspective on how product should think and work. So it's one of the first books that I read when I started my career, and I still refer back to stories and points from that book. You didn't speak about the MBA, but I think it's important for good product managers to have a solid understanding of business as well. Just to cut down tensions between departments and to have a good overall understanding and putting things in perspective.
Okay, well, Vinay, thanks. This has been I think pretty insightful, and I think people,
you're welcome,
people are going to get a lot of things out of this. I'll see you for lunch in a sec. Cheers.